Today, I chat with Kate on what it's like to use the cognitive function of extroverted sensing, which I call responsive sensing, in Myers-Briggs, and to get some expert Myers-Briggs advice from her. Hi, I'm Sandra.
And I'm Em.
And this is Family Personalities, the podcast that helps you create a more peaceful and compassionate family dynamic using personality type. Hi, families. I am very excited to share with you today's guest, Kate Mason, who is the only other person I know out there who is podcasting about personality type and parenting. But first, I wanted to let you know about a parenting and personality type course, online course, that's coming up. This is not a sponsored read or anything like that, and it's not something that I'm personally involved with. But Harumi, who was one of our previous guests, shared this information with me. And the person who's teaching the course, Sue Blair, is also a previous guest on the podcast. So this sounded right up our alley. And so I wanted to share it with you guys. The course is being offered through AusAPT, which is, that's AusAPT, and that's the Australian, I think it's called Association for Psychological Type. It's described as an online type and parenting course presented by acclaimed type and parenting educator and coach Sue Blair in partnership with AusAPT. Learn strategies for parenting and meeting the needs of both parent and child through the lens of psychological type. So this is coming up real quick here. It starts on November 4th. So you'll want to go ahead and look that up straight away and get signed up. It's, I looked up the cost and it's very inexpensive. And just a note, when you check the time that it's offered at, make sure you realize that it's listed in Australia, Sydney time, so that you can do the conversion to see what time it is in your, wherever you live. You can find a link to this course in the show notes. So check that out. And then I also just wanted to call out that the Association for Psychological Type is actually a great resource. AusAPT is a really awesome resource. You don't have to live in the Australia area to take advantage of it. I went to one of their conferences, one of their online conferences, and it was amazing. And there are associations for psychological type in different areas, so you can kind of look up yours. I think the one in the Bay Area in California is pretty active. I haven't really found anything great in the Pacific Northwest, unfortunately, but there may be others that I don't know about in other locations. So that is something you may want to look into for yourself. Okay, now back to today's wonderful guest, Kate Mason. She is the author of the book, Who is This Monster or Treasure in My House? She's the host of the podcast, Parenting and Personalities. She is passionate about people, understanding their personalities in order to gain resilience and confidence. She believes that once you know who you are, you can connect with everyone in life. So I brought Kate on in part to make use of her expertise in type and to alert you to her work so that you can follow her, including her podcast, but also because she has ESFP preferences, and that is one of the parents I have yet to bring on as a guest. So she is going to be our ESFP parent guest, and we're going to dive into the lead cognitive function in ESFPs, which is extroverted sensing, which I call responsive sensing. And while I don't specifically ask questions around introverted feeling, that is the second function in ESFPs. It's introverted feeling, which I call resonant feeling. And you can definitely hear that coming out in the things that she says, and she does bring up the differences between her and her family members because she uses feeling and they all use thinking. So if you want a little more background in those cognitive functions, we covered extroverted sensing or responsive sensing in parents in episode 57, and we covered introverted feeling or resonant feeling in parents in episode 97. And if you don't know what a cognitive function is, if you're kind of new to that level of Myers-Briggs, you can find the intro to cognitive functions in episode 39. Okay, so let's dive in with Kate.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'm really happy to have you on the podcast today. I was hoping you could introduce yourself first, just like a little bit about where you live and what your family looks like.
I live in South Australia, so quite a long way from you. And it's a lot of people call it country town of where we live at, capital city. So we're one of the smaller ones. Everyone always thinks about Sydney and Melbourne in Australia when they talk about Australia. But it's a wonderful place to live. And I have two children and they're adults now. They're 28 and 30. So when I started looking at personalities, they were all about three and five when I actually started this whole journey. So it's been a long, long time.
Yeah, you've gotten to see them really like develop into their adult selves. That's awesome.
I have. And the journey with personality is massive. So, you know, this is why I love what you do and I love what I do, because I think that it's such an essential thing for all the listeners who are listening to know and understand themselves and their kids and their partners. Really, really important. So yeah, they're great. I've got a son and a daughter and they're personality-fied to the hilt. They roll their eyes when I talk and they say to friends, oh my goodness, you know, and if I ever have a funeral, I'm sure they're going to get up and give me a really hard time. About how much I spoke about personalities and how important it was to them.
So
and here in Australia right now, it's a beautiful day of 30 degrees in September, so it's all gorgeous.
Very nice. And what's your MBTI type?
Okay, so I am an E, extroverted, S for sensing, feeling, and a perceiving type, so ESFP. So pretty relaxed and cruisy.
Yeah, I know. I'm so jealous. In my next life, I'll come back as an ESFP or an ESTP.
Gotta admit, my daughter's ESTP, and she says we have so much fun together.
Yeah, I bet you do.
We do. Yeah. So, yes. What else would you like to ask me then? Cut this bit out afterwards.
Well, I was going to ask you, what are your kids' personality types? So ESTP for your daughter.
So I've got an ESTP and my son is an ISTJ. So very different.
Very different.
My husband is an ISTP. So I've got a whole lot of thinkers and I'm, you know, we'll discuss this later on, but the thinking type is my trickiest. Mm-hmm. And so even my daughter, who's very similar to me, her difference in her thinking style really changes our conversation very much. And so often I almost find myself being the quiet one because she's very inquisitive and curious and asks questions and questions everything that I say. And as an ESFP, you don't really want someone to do that because a lot of the time I elaborate my stories quite a bit. And having someone question the truth of every single thing I say, which they all do. I've told my son's quite quiet. And he's lovely. And I've said to him, if I'm telling a story, just be quiet. Don't say anything. You can tell me later if you don't think it was true, but don't do it while I'm telling it. It's just not a good thing. You know, it just ruins the whole feel. Whereas my daughter will tell me right there and then, you know, she'll come out and like, you know, this is that's not what happened. You didn't do that. And
the truth is quite important. It is.
So we're a very mixed family of, except we don't have any intuition running through the family in any way. So otherwise a pretty mixed bag.
And so how did you get into type?
Oh, look, long story. My husband and I have been married for 37 years and I've gone out with him since I was 19. So really we've been together for the last 43 years.
Yeah.
And we were getting married and my sister-in-law, we argued and we still do, argued a lot. And my sister-in-law said to me after we got married, she said, listen, I think you need this. And she handed me a book called Personality Plus, written by Florence Littow. And it was all about temperaments. So the four temperaments of, and the Hippocrates temperaments were choleric, phlegmatic, melancholic, and sanguine. And they've been turned into a business model called DISC today, which is, you know, along the same things, but in a workplace. So I read it and that was the beginning of the personality journey because I realized that my husband and I were totally, totally different, almost 40 out of 40 different temperaments. So he was a very, let's get stuff done today. Don't do it well. Just get it done. Bossy, really bossy. And I was kind of a fun pony. So I was a sanguine. I was just like, let's have a good time. Who cares? Why are you stressing over all of these things? So a lot of our arguments also, the thing about temperaments, it doesn't describe extroversion, introversion. So that wasn't until I did Myers-Briggs type indicator I discovered that. But I was a person that loved people. My husband, even today, says I don't really need that many friends, you know. So that element wasn't included, but it was all in there. So we sat down and thought to ourselves, do we really want to stay married? We're really different people. But as people might know, the things that attract you at first are the things that drive you away quite often. So mm-hmm. because the thing, they're often filling the gaps of who you are. And then all of a sudden you're trying to make them like yourself. You get past that first love stage where you do everything where they want you to do and all that. And then suddenly you go, actually, no, I don't want to go to cowboy movies. You know, I don't want to, for him, it was like, I want to stay home. And me, it was like, let's get out. There were so many things that were different, but had attracted us. So we realized that that's actually, let's keep moving forward. Just acknowledge what it was that attracted us and embrace it rather than drive it away. So my husband, we have businesses and my husband loves those businesses and drives them all the time, whereas I don't really care. I love it, you know, but so we wouldn't be where we are today as a couple without that drive. And had we not acknowledged that and looked at that, that would have been a real pity. It would have been very sad. So what happened for us was about 5 years later, we had a son, Jack. And by the time Jack was three, he was so neat and tidy. Tidiest toy cupboard in town. My husband and I are not neat, tidy people. We're very relaxed. And I went back to this book and I had a look at the temperaments. And there he was. He was a melancholic and he liked his life structured. So altered my parenting to suit that because he would have, I would say to him, you would have been a real head case if I hadn't read that book because we would have just gone through our life instantly just doing everything. And he would have been, oh my goodness, I can't do that that fast. I'm just stressed. It's so stressed. So, and another amazing thing. And then we have my daughter. She's a mixture of my husband and I. So yeah, that was all good. Then at about 40, we have businesses and I went and did a Myers-Briggs type indicator course to help understand our staff because we have a lot of staff.
Okay.
And I came back from that course. It was a 3-day course and I came back and I just thought, this isn't just for work. This isn't just for businesses. This is real life. This is your family. I came back and I had a look at my husband who I always thought was an extrovert and realized that he was an introvert that extroverts well because part of his job was to go around, we have indoor swim schools, to go around the pool deck and talk to parents, to work with kids. So he was constantly on and so therefore very grumpy and didn't want to do anything when he got home, worn out. Until I'd done the MBTI, I had no idea around that. Yeah. I had no idea that my intuitive friends, of whom I have many, whose ideas I often thought were a bit wafty, a bit quirky, pull them out of the sky. Really? Why would you think that? And realize what an impact those people have on my life and how to embrace them and how my family and I would just, we would just go along doing everything daily, repetitively, you know, and the difference that made, the thinking and feeling was massive. Coming home and realizing that my family were thinkers, I say to people, I would have been a ball in a corner had I not known that because their responses to everything I say is, oh, really? Do you really think that? Why would, don't worry about that person. You've got to be kidding. So massively important. And the J and the P, you know, the perceivers, there are three perceivers in our family and we can all say, do you want to go to the movie in 15 minutes? Yeah, let's go. My son, oh my goodness, he has to brush his teeth. He has to get his clothes organized. He has to tidy up. So ever since he was, ever since I'd done this course and since he was younger and I knew he was melancholic, I always would say to him, we're leaving in 15 minutes. You know, you've got to give him space and time to get organized.
Right.
So massive impact on my life, massive impact on working with staff too, which we use even up to today. We've got, swim schools have got up to 40 staff. We've got managers and assistant managers as well. So really important understanding how we deal with them ourselves. And we usually with the permanent staff, we run workshops on it so that they all get a handle on each other as well. But more importantly, the happier you are at home, the happier you are in the workplace, the better you know and understand yourself, the more you can understand other people. So I just sit there and go, why wouldn't you? Get to understand yourself.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So that's why I do what I do. So I started a podcast a couple of years ago because I wrote a book called Who Is This Monster or Treasure in My House? And I wrote that because we all love our kids and they're monsters sometimes and we whinge and complain. But really when someone else picks on them, they become a treasure and we go, oh no, they're not that bad. So I wrote that about personality and trying to do a simple way of understanding who you are as a parent with your child and understand their personalities. And part of that was a podcast with a book publisher that I worked with. And so I started talking. And as you can see, I love talking because I'm an extrovert. And I love telling other people about the benefits of all of this kind of, you know, this information that they can have and use in their lives.
Well, I think it's really special having you on here. I think I'm pretty sure that on my last searching, we're the only two people who are podcasting about this specifically.
Yeah. I think we are about our families. You know, people have got podcasts for businesses and stuff like that, but they don't know it. No.
Yeah. Specifically personality type and parenting and families. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny. We mentioned this. You mentioned this briefly before we started recording, but I do think our podcasts are different from one another in that, you know, yours is a very ESFP podcast and mine is a very INFJ podcast.
But
both approaches come to the same, you know, we're doing the same thing, but just in our own ways. And so it's fun. It's like, I think yours is, you offer the practical advice much more quickly than I do. Whereas I'm like, I want to sit here and analyze it to death, you know.
But that's great too, because we're going to appeal, we all, you know, everyone appeals to a different listener too, don't they? You know, but like you say, we are the only ones out there, and in depth wise, I know that my INFJ and INTJ friends can think I'm a little shallow. Because I love people so much. I gather friends all the time. In fact, my husband used to say when I went to a workshop, oh, I just don't come home with any more friends, you know, because I'd come home, oh, they're so beautiful. And so therefore I am much more, I like to say to people, I am actually much more a deeper person than I appear to be, because INFJs often have less friends and much deeper friendships in a way. But I try to cover my bases with all of my friends as much as I can, as much of the time.
Yeah.
But that, you know, even a different personality type really views a friendship really differently, which is really important for listeners to know.
Sure.
That it doesn't mean because somebody doesn't see you a lot or sit for 5 hours with you listening to your story, it doesn't mean they don't care about you or that they don't love you. It's just if they are a person like myself, they're there for you whenever you need them, but they're not in the same depth.
Right. Yeah. Everyone has a different preference for friendship, for sure.
They do. Yeah. They do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can help people take that part of life less personally too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I wanted a couple things I'm excited to have you on the show for. One is that you have ESFP preferences, and I have yet, like, I love to have guests of each type on, parent guests of each type, and sometimes child guests of different types too, although I have less access to that. But I have yet to have an ESFP parent guest. So that's really exciting that you can fill that slot, as well as, you know, you have your expertise in this topic as well. So I think, you know, we're going to try and squish both of those things into this episode. And then I'd love, you know, for listeners just to know that your podcast is out there in case they didn't know that, so they can go and check you out too and see the different perspective that you bring to personality type and parenting. So why don't we start with talking about you as an ESFP parent, and then transition from there.
All right. So as an ESF parent, I can change my plans within seconds. It just depends on what comes up, what happens to happen within that day. So it doesn't have, I'm not a long-term planner. So with my children when they were young, fun is my main word. I love fun. So whatever I might find in that day that I could take them to that I would think would be a bit more exciting. I'm not a thrill seeker. I don't like dangerous things. But I do. So I would make sure there was an activity every day that's external to the house, because I didn't want to be in the house all the time. So we would have something planned that even if it was a park, a visit with a friend, just an activity that was out of the house so that I could be energized and that the kids would be doing something different. So it was always, and I had to be really careful with my son because I didn't want to overwhelm him with too much socialization, but as a result, he regards himself as an ambivert, just, you know, and I do also lose track of conversation. So I'll just quickly throw this in. he regards himself as an ambivert. And I just say to him, no, you're just great at extroverting because you had a mother who did push you into social situations. So he's great in social situations, but he still gets exhausted. So, you know, there's your difference in that. I'm not good with planning. As you can see, today we had tricky times with our times. And I went over that so many times to check and make sure, because as a person, my life is spent thinking, oh, have I got that date right? Have I forgotten an appointment? Have I checked in with anything? Because I'll agree to something and then I'll forget to write it in my diary. The other day I had an entry in my diary that said 10:30. And it was just 10:30. And I thought, what am I doing at 10:30 today? And then luckily someone texted me and said, I really look forward to seeing you at 10:30 this morning. So I'm like, now I know what I'm doing at 10:30 today. So with the children, I did things like, I don't know, we had a children plays and something called the Wiggles over here and bands like that. And at least twice we were headed to the concert, and lucky I took my mum. My mum's an ISFJ, so quietly, beautifully sitting there organising her frantic daughter who's always off doing these things. And she's sitting with me with the holding the tickets as we're driving, and the kids were about 5 and 7. And she looks at me and goes, dear, you do realise this concert's tomorrow, don't you? And I went, oh, and they're all sitting in the car ready to hit the concert. So I turned around and I said to them, guess what? The concert's tomorrow, but the best part about today is we're going to go to Kmart and we're going to buy you a toy for the concert tomorrow, because they were selling the toys that would be sold at the concert. We're going to get you one of those and we're going to go to the concert tomorrow instead. And they're like, yay, because they're getting a toy. And there was no, my mum's just so patient. She sat there. My husband just rolls his eyes and goes, oh, you've got to be kidding. I do things like, I went to the zoo for a birthday party one day and we're walking around. We can't find a birthday party at the zoo. And my husband says, of course, I don't go and ask because I'm just assuming it's going to be there. So I go and ask the kiosk where they have the birthday party listings. And they said, look, no, that birthday party is actually tomorrow. So I turned around to my kids and I said, you are so lucky. And they said, why? And I said, you get to go to the zoo 2 days in a row. No other kid's ever done that. And they're going, oh, my goodness, I can't believe this. So we went 2 days in a row. They thought they were really lucky. So I like That's to turn great. My mistakes into a bit of fun, but it just depends on who's joining in the fun with me. And, you know, my husband is long suffering. So a lot of the time my parenting is making mistakes but covering them up quite well, and
I can pivot really fast. I'd be like, I can't, but like, now I've ruined the whole day because now we're at the zoo and don't even have to be here, now I have to come back tomorrow too, you know.
And the self-flagellation, there is none. So, you know, like, I don't, as an ESFP, I don't understand, and even Cassie is an ESTP. Mm-hmm. We don't understand why people are down on themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we go, why worry about that? You know, like, seriously, it's happened, it's gone, it's done. And this is very much that living in the now approach, is that don't dwell on it. My husband and my son are far greater dwellers because they're introverts and they do a lot more internal thinking than we do. And because we're extroverts, we've dealt with it. Okay, we've made a mistake. Let's just move on. And I don't ever sit and beat myself up. And So I'm actually I try really hard to be sympathetic and empathetic to people, because I understand that that must be so stressful to do that to yourself and to, you know, oh my goodness, I've upset or I've done something wrong. And so I feel like my world is very good in a sense. Mm-hmm. You know, because I don't have that, but then that can make me a bit shallow at times. And it does mean I don't delve into situations that possibly need more unpacking, which is your empathetic strength and amazing. And I do have a lot of INFJ friends who I think help me unpack all of that.
Yeah. But as INFJ and ESFPs are probably good for each other, you know?
Yes. I think they are. They kind of pull each other. My girlfriend calls me her slap around, and she's my slap around. So, you know, she'll come to me with some ideas or be really upset about something. And I'll say to her, hey, listen, you know, this, and this, it doesn't make sense. Stop burying your head in this. And every now and then she'll say to me, because she's a J, you need to make a decision on this, because I get caught up in 100 decisions that I could be doing. Where could I be going? What could I be doing? And she'll tell me and help me out. So it's really handy to know your type and other people's types, because rather than if I didn't know who she was or whatever, I might think she's a bit bossy. But because we can talk to each other, and she might think I'm a bit floaty, but because we can talk to each other at this level, she also uses MBTI in her business. So it's really handy. But I'm also very concrete. So when my children are learners, and I was a school teacher, when my children are learners, I would always find solutions that are practical. I would show with blocks. I would, it was always a very practical solution to things. I'd help them add up. We're also very routine learners in our house. So repetition is really important for us. Mm-hmm. It's really important to be able to see the problem, break it down into pictures or something like that. We're not intuitive learners, don't see the end result before coming back to the actual process of doing it. Mm-hmm. And so as a school teacher, I didn't recognize the children in my class because I didn't know about it, because I was a teacher before I had children. Yeah. I didn't recognize their learning style. And the listeners, intuitive and sensing children's learning styles are so different.
Very different.
You're an intuitive parent and you're teaching your child or helping your child with homework. You're going to come to it from a very different angle if they're sensing and they need to know from the very bottom of the stairs how they're going to do something. You're going to be coming from the top and perhaps problem solving in a far, far more sophisticated or harder way than a sensing child can take on. So yeah. I was kind of lucky I didn't have an intuitive child, because my teaching style, I find it very hard to do that.
Vondra, I just heard Bill Burr's rant saying how women should be supporting female athletes and not Real Housewives who just yell at each other.
That's ridiculous. Real Housewives is a sport. Join us on From the Bleachers, where we analyze the strategy and gameplay that our favorite reality stars use to earn additional seasons of play and social media fame.
And if you're lucky, Sandra will pull out her apology play rubric so you can all see what an easy grader I am.
I'm sorry, Mandy, but if you think Monica's apology to Heather on Salt Lake City deserved anything over a 2.5, you're delusional.
Whether we're breaking down confrontation play, relishing the bravo, bravo, bravo moments, or awarding a tardy for the party, we are the only place you'll find in-depth analysis of the plays that your favorite housewives are making on our screens.
From the Bleachers, a Real Housewives game analysis is available everywhere podcasts live.
I think it's interesting that, you know, in general, you know, the majority of teachers, at least at the elementary level, tend to be sensing.
I agree.
And I think my daughter, who has ISFP preferences, I think she may have a teacher who is an intuitive preference this year. My guess is INFP, you know, I don't know her that well, so I can't, you know, but I'm just like making quick guesses here. And so it's been interesting seeing my daughter come home and like, she's never been so stressed about homework before. But she seems like very confused about what she's supposed to do. And I'm like, well, what did the teacher say? And she, you know, she'll tell me the instruction and I'm like, well, that seems really obvious to me. Like, but I realize like I'm making an intuitive leap that she's not comfortable making. Mm. And it's like the teacher probably didn't break it down and like provide an example and like say exactly do X, Y, Z. And so, I'm having to like do that step for her, and she, you know, she's only in third grade, so
yeah, and that's really hard to you because that's not your natural
language. I'm like, okay, how did I make that intuitive leap? And I gotta go back and like think that through.
Very much so. And an example here is a friend of mine who's ISFJ, and she's got an INTP child. Now the NT, as we know, is a highly critical thinker, very sitting above everything, watching what's going on and critiquing it. And he's actually extremely intelligent as well. So he'll come home from school and he'll fail things because he's got the answers straight, but he hasn't got the working out. And the school system wants the working out. And my girlfriend wants the working out. And so she is saying to me, oh, he's so lazy, he doesn't do it. And I said, no, he's not lazy. You know, you've got a kid that's actually really clever, really smart. And sadly, you're going to have to teach him that society wants the working out. And you're going to have to explain to him in an NT way, which is really hard because I find it intuitive thinkers the hardest people for me. But describe, tell him he's smarter than society and he's actually going to have to baby down what he thinks to suit that. And she's only kind of just coming to grips with it now as he's kind of managing to get good work. You know, he's ahead of his year level, but they're not. So in a school system, you need to be observant about whether your child is sensing or intuitive because the school system might not be doing the right thing by them. Neither might you. If you're a sensing person, you can't see how they do their homework. Same with you, like you say, if you're intuitive with a sensing child, it's hard. So for a sensing mother with an intuitive child, equally hard. So these are the important things about knowing about and understanding personalities that I never knew about when my kids were little. Going back and looking at that, I go, wow. So I find a learning has to be step by step for myself too. And that's fine.
So ESFPs lead with a function called extroverted sensing, which I call responsive sensing. Yeah. And, you know, when I talk about responsive sensing, I kind of like break it into four categories. And so I just want to make sure we touch on each one. You probably have already touched on a couple.
Yep, go for it.
But one of them, I don't think this first one we've gotten into, but a lot of people who use responsive sensing or extroverted sensing find that they are alert to sensory details and they tend to have a great awareness of like the physical details of what's happening around them and in their body. Does this one resonate with you? And does it appear in your parenting at all?
Oh, it totally resonates. So I'm very much about what is I can see, feel, and how it's I have no imagination. I don't really imagine things. I'm not very creative around things. When we go on holidays, my sensory thing is I want to stay in a really beautiful hotel. I actually don't care about the experience that so much that we might have around the place. I want my surroundings to be really beautiful so that I can see them. I want whatever activity we're doing, we choose activities. They're things that are great food or going to a movie. It's not something that might be a walk up a mountain where I'm involved in the beauty of nature and getting in touch with myself. No way. That's not me. I want to be somewhere. I say that when we go on holidays, we do very sensing holidays. We do the things that a tourist will do in a place. I have an intuitive friend who takes us on holidays and we do crazy things like go on. We went to Thailand with him, go on longboat he just goes out, hires a longboat. We're in there. There's 10 of us. I'm thinking we're going to drown, trying to check out how I can catch my kids if we fall out of this longboat, which is just, so far above the surface of the water. Mm-hmm. And I was going to go on a speedboat, which would have been safe and nice and really good. But we ended up doing this longboat ride and it became the highlight of our holiday.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't the highlight of the experience while we were doing it. It became, wow, remember when we went off track and we did that, So these are the things that intuitives do for me is take me out of myself and I'm out of my comfort zone. So that we do something a bit more exciting. So I'm not really exciting, if you get what I mean. So we're all quite happy with doing that because we don't have intuition to make sure that we have more experience is a bit crazy. My son is pushing himself at the moment and he's going out with a beautiful intuitive, an INFJ, and they do quite different things and she does quite quirky different things in a sense. Not quirky, they're just different, and so he's had to go salsa dancing to have a go at stuff like that, stuff he'd never do because they're a little bit different. But he's thrown himself out there. He went to Marrakesh just a month or so ago, places, so he's adventuring into places that he wouldn't normally have done. So he's decided they're on a bucket list and he's going to do them. So the sensing people, we have to drive ourselves to get out of the mundane.
Think outside the box
and adventure ourselves outside the box and do things different and stuff like that. I kind of do understand who I am, but I do love being that too.
Sure.
If you get what I mean.
Too.
I don't. The other thing is, I don't investigate. I'm not curious. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to many intuitive people on my podcasts, and they always say, "Get curious." And I go out and I go, "Kate, get curious. Ask questions. you know, you've got to do these things." So I love hearing about new ideas, and I'm when I hear, listen, and I hear someone, and I believe in it, I put it into action. I'm like, right, that's it. I'm doing this, and so I have a lot of. I have a lot of things in my life that I'm passionate about, like this, that when I see it works, I do it. But if I don't see it works and it looks a bit airy-fairy to me, then I'm not going to go there.
Yeah.
We were talking about Enneagram, which you could mention later. And Enneagram, I didn't want to involve myself in Enneagram because I was already working with temperaments and already working with Myers-Briggs. And for an ESFP, if I start opening my options, I could engage in so many things that I love, that I'm passionate about, that I wouldn't ever do one purposefully and in depth. So I never looked at it until the other week, and then I went, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
So for me, if I spread my, I can spread myself too thin because I love to start lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting when you're talking because we are – to our first and fourth functions are flipped from one another, but I can hear the introverted intuitive in you and how you try and draw and pull on that wisdom of the introverted intuition inside of you sometimes. And I feel the same way where introverted intuition drives me, but sometimes I am pulling on that extroverted sensing wisdom and knowledge sometimes, or I try to, but it's hard.
It is.
It definitely takes a lot of work and energy for me to do that.
It does. And when you're happy in yourself and you're in yourself, you don't feel a need to change unless something changes for you that needs that to pull that other energy into the situation, you know, and drive that. So a lot of the time I am myself getting older, because I am getting older, and I'm like, oh, you know, this is moving on in my life. I am reaching harder for that other side of who I am. You know, in that sense, you know, it's, yeah, this is what happens with age. Yeah. With age, I always remember people, you know, you wish your body was different, but do your mind, you learn a lot of stuff, and it's really important, you know, in that sense. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that is the second kind of thing that I have listed for responsive sensing is we talked about this one already, but being immersed in the moment and being flexible. You talked about being able to predict very easily, or being able to not predict, sorry, being able to pivot very easily. They think you can't predict the future. So why overthink it?
Oh, I love that saying.
That's so opposite of me, but please.
That is so true, because people like you will go, oh my goodness, what will happen? And you're looking after the world too, which I'm like, I'm not looking after the world. I'm looking after here and now. I'm looking after my kids. Why am I going to worry? Like, my daughter's just become engaged to a gorgeous guy, and everyone's saying to me, oh my goodness, you know, the wedding, are you going to, oh, you must be really stressed about planning a wedding about, now she's married an ISTJ. Woohoo! Because I don't have to worry about the wedding or the planning.
Yeah.
And by the time that he'd finished proposing at the end of that day, they had their wedding list planned. They had the venue emailed. They had everything done. So for me, I don't have to plan the future, which is great, because I didn't want to do that anyway. And I was dreading that. I dread the thought. I don't like planning events because I don't want to plan forward. It scares me because things change. And for Paul and I, the biggest thing for peas like that was we planned with a friend to travel overseas a year ahead. This is when the kids were younger. And we paid for Lake Powell. It was $10,000 for a houseboat on Lake Powell with these people, right? Now, that was big money. And we paid it ahead. And I'm just thinking, this is just not going to, there is something going to go wrong, because peas don't like doing things ahead because things will change. And what if I'm not ready for it? And Paul's dad got very sick, and he actually, we were leaving to go to overseas, and he collapsed that day. And we went to Hawaii, but had to cancel the rest of the trip because he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, see, you know, had we had alternatives, we would have been able to build in those alternatives and change the trip and push it out, and paying up front, just really stressful for things like that. So for us being who we are, if you plan too far in advance, it doesn't always happen. Things don't turn out that way. You don't know what's going to be around the corner. Yeah. And then you worry about what you've planned in advance, or you worry about what's going to happen. You know, I've got an INFJ friend and she says, oh, I so worry about my grandkids and what the world holds for them and their futures. And I look and I go, really? It could all change in a heartbeat. You know, like seriously, why don't you enjoy now and having them there, right there and now, and enjoy what's there rather than just having all this angst about the future. And that's so simplistic. You know, I'm listening to myself and it is so simplistic. The negative of being myself is that forward planning, not forward planning, is not good, because then I don't project myself enough to perhaps expand my business and have plans to move forward and steps to move forward in place. So I rely on other people when I need that to do. I rely on friends who are big picture to sit down with me and plan moving forward at my pace.
Yeah.
So that will work for me. So it is, you know, there's negatives and positives in everything. And and so that is me. And like I say, if I see something or do something and I'm sold on it, I do it. You know, I always say I can push out anything, but if I'm passionate about it, then you won't stop hearing about it. I can sell ice to Eskimos, so to speak. But we are very transient. You know, we'll pivot on anything. If something goes wrong, you know, you just drop whatever that is. A girlfriend of mine was coming to see me and she rang me up in the moment and just said, I've got to go and pick this thing up. And I just go, sure, not a problem. Just go now. I'll find something else to do. She's an INFJ. She said, oh, I'm really, really sorry. No.
Yeah.
I said to her, and don't self-flagellate. It doesn't matter. There'll be lots of other things I can get doing in the meantime. It's not an issue. So it is a gift and a, not a curse, but a gift, and it's also not always a great thing to be like, you know.
Yeah, and same on the opposite end. I mean, that's, I think that's the biggest takeaway with Myers-Briggs in general, is that it's not the functions themselves that are, you know, we can't apply judgment to the functions, but it's when we're maybe too one-sided on a function, that's when we can get ourselves into trouble. Yeah. And it's being able to find the balance.
Mm, very much.
It's where, but you can't find perfect balance. Otherwise we wouldn't have a Myers-Briggs personality type. If you were half introverted intuition and half extroverted sensing, then you wouldn't be an ESFP or you wouldn't be an INFJ, right?
So nice. Absolutely. And then when we talk about perfection, you know, there's no such thing as perfect. Imperfect is perfect. And there are a lot of people that I deal with that are perfectionists out there, and a lot of people that I talk to are. And that's a struggle in itself, because life is about non-perfection, and it's really hard. You know, I think that's a hard thing too, if you want everything to be perfect. And I'm so lucky because I don't.
Well, and there's just beauty in being different too.
Yeah, there is. There is.
So let's see. The third thing that I write about for people who use responsive sensing is that they are quick to act. So I really love the work of Dario Nardi and his the brain science that he does around it. But he noticed in the brains of responsive sensing users, that they're able to pivot quickly to take action based on an input coming in. They use their gut instinct to react immediately. You've already talked about this, but
And it's so true. It's just so true. So you just go with whatever is there right now on the spot, and you turn it around.
Did that make like the younger years of parenting easier for you? I feel like that was the hardest
Much
part
easier.
Of the younger years of parenting for me, was the fact that I had to do that all the time, because it was like the it's like something dropped on the floor and has to be you know, met, cleaned up, and then someone's yelling over here needs my attention, and someone's using, and then like that, I hated that, like having to like react to what's happening now in the moment, because I just want to be like in my head and like planning things in the future, and you know, and it it just exhausted me. And so I'm just wondering if that would that part of parenting itself would have been easier if I was an
that's really sensor. Interesting hearing your side of that, though, you know, how stressful that was for you, because I just wipe up the vomit, pick it up, pull something else out of the oven if for the other kid, you know, like, it was very simple. I hated it. It's drudgery. It's really it is real drudgery because I like fun. So it's like, then I would make a game out of it if I could, or I would take myself. So if stuff like that was happening, you needed the internal world, I would just pick them all up if it was just too, and I would just get out of the house and find something to do. So it was almost like not running away from the situation, but I would, pivot and go, this isn't working right now. Let's go do something else. So just turn the whole thing around. I'd leave a mess. It wouldn't fuss me. We would just go. And perhaps too, the mess didn't bother me as much because perceiving types can be a bit messier anyway. You know, we have our puddles of mess all around the place, and we quite like that, you know. Mm. I always say to particularly staff members when we talk about this, do not tidy up a perceiving person's table, because they know where everything is. Even if you look at it and you go, oh, my God, that's such a muddle. No. They will be highly insulted and very angry because you straighten everything and put everything in lines and make sure everything's perfect on your desk, their desk. And it's the same as a kid almost tidying up a perceiving child's mess. They might actually know where everything goes, and it might be right spot for them. You know, it's always a conversation to have. Whereas Jack, even as a teenager, he was messy because that comes with teens, but he was never messy with the things he loved, and he was pretty neat and tidy. Whereas Cass's room was a floor robe and there was just stuff everywhere, but she has moved into her own house in the last year, and I have noticed a distinct improvement.
Okay.
So once she's proud of whatever she's got, it's changed, in that sense. So, sorry, have I sidetracked? Where do we go? Getting back to pivoting, it does make it easier. You know, for someone like you, that would be so hard, so hard.
Yeah, so I was supposed to get this done today and I couldn't because all this stuff was coming up, you know, and had a hard time with that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear you say it still wasn't like because to me, all that just little having to turn and clean up this and turn and take care of that and turn and take care of that was extroverted sensing. But for you to say you didn't like that either because it wasn't fun, it was drudgery.
That's right. That
makes me feel like a little bit like, okay, other people have other personality types also had that too, but for a different reason, maybe.
Yeah, a different reason. And also, when you're saying that about the drudgery, I also didn't do imaginative, my children luckily weren't like that either. You know, I had friends that went and built cubby houses with their kids and played inside the cubby house with their children and, you know, invested all of that imaginative time. I was like, if you want a cubby house, I'll set it up for you. You go play. If you want this, I'll set it up for you. You go play. But I wasn't never involved in, and I used to look at them and just think, oh, my goodness, what a waste of time and energy. I would rather have a cup of coffee and set up the activity. Mm-hmm. So I was quite a different, very different from those people. And a lot of those were intuitives that would get in and play with their children and be with their kids. Whereas I was like, I'll set up the activity, but I don't want to participate in it if it's not what I want to do.
I don't want to participate either. I wonder if it's if it's our extroverted intuitives who will get in there and play with the kids more in peace.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe you would want to be in your head. Yeah.
Would you want
to be in your head?
Oh, yeah. And I just need, more quiet and more space. And I just don't find children play all that interesting.
No.
Yeah, my mom finds it fun. My mom's an ENFP. She loves to dive in and do stuff with them.
Yeah.
And when I think of my co-host on the podcast, Em, I feel like she does that kind of stuff with her daughter.
Mm. Yeah.
More. Yeah. And she's INFP. So maybe it's the NP.
Maybe it's the NF. Oh, yeah, not the NP. Yeah, yeah. And it is that, because they go with the flow a lot too, don't they? So it's not like it's messing any of their day up either. Because they'd be going, I just look and go, what a mess, you know, because I don't want a big cubby house. I'm not building a big cubby house out of sheets and that I have to tidy up later. So I let them build their own when they used to do that. I think, I'll just let them do it because I couldn't stand the thought of tidying it all up. Yeah. I think parenting's just a hard gig sometimes.
There's no type who's going to say it's easy.
That's right. That's well, you sure. know, it, it, it's a... it's hard, but it is made easier by what we know and how we can think about ourselves. And I think it's about looking after you, because if I'm happy, my kids are happy, my partner's happy. So I always, you know, as a listener listening, if you can keep yourself and make yourself happy, and you know and understand yourself well enough, then a happy person creates other happy people, because you're not grumpy and sad or upset. So that's where I just go back to the logic of look at yourself, make you happy. Don't, you know, don't spend your life trying to help others until you've helped yourself. It doesn't work.
So let's pivot a little bit. And speaking of pivoting, and talk about your family dynamics. So you mentioned that all of the members of your family besides yourself use a thinking function, and then you use, you know, feeling. What are the tools that you've used to kind of work through that?
The tools are that I realize that they're using a logical language. It doesn't stop me from being hurt or upset. And I realize that I'm always going to get a barrage of questions about what I'm doing if it's a feeling thing. Like if I say, oh, I feel really sorry for someone because this, they will have logic around it. So they'll come back with, but really, they've had just as good a life as you. They've had money. They've done this. They've done that. And so all the logic is there, but there's not the, yeah, it must be just really tough because that's the situation they're in right now. Mentally, they're not feeling good. The logic's all sitting in there to help, but not. But the logic is really good for me too, because it drags me out of, a lot of the time I get lost in that feeling and worried about people, and they can come in with the logic and dispel that concern or bring me out of that feeling to go, actually, no, they're correct. It's, I mean, an example I often use in my workshops, we have a business that people used to pay cash for. They don't anymore now with direct debit, which is fantastic. But they used to come in, they'd pay a monthly fee to swim. And one woman in particular kind of pulled out her purse and lay out all the small change on the counter. And my daughter and I were both on reception at the time. We were both working. And she went in, and I turned to my daughter and I said, oh, that poor lady. I said, she looks like she's finding it really hard to pay. Mm-hmm. Maybe next month we could reduce her fees. My daughter looks at me and she says, you've got to be kidding. She just pulled small change out of her purse. For all you know, she had a credit card sitting in there. You didn't know she was using up her small change. She said, if you were running the business, we wouldn't be in business because you would be doing this all the time. And so I sit there and go, she's right. You know, like that's the truth of it. It was a decision based on a feeling of, oh, you know, but she could have had hundreds of thousands in her bank. I wouldn't have known that, but right. I was just using what I could see at the time. Mm-hmm. And associating that with not being well off, you know, and she was saying she could be really well off. How do you know? Mm-hmm. So the questioning around that's really important. I still, as I say, find with my daughter and I that she, because we're both extroverts, you know, she'll question a lot of things I do and say. And I really, Mum, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But I just sit there and I go, you know what? Love her. She's great fun. I'm not going to be bothered, you know, it's just her head doing this. So it doesn't, I let it slide off a lot more. You know, there are times if you're feeling a bit flattened, you've got the thinking types digging away, you kind of go, oh, it's very hard. But I can't, I also, I have a brother who's an INTP, and many years ago I had someone who said that the Myers-Briggs was woohoo, you know, horoscopes, mm-hmm. all this type of thing. And he was an INTP himself, this guy. So I called my brother up, and my brother had told me he didn't really care about Myers-Briggs. He worked in big banks, done it heaps of times. So he told me. He'd never told me this. I rang up and said, what do I do? He said, well, Kate, I've done the Myers-Briggs about four or five times. He said, and I change my answer every time just to see what it comes out as. You know, he said, sometimes I'm an extrovert, sometimes I'm a J, you know. So INTPs like to question everything about a system. Yep. And he said to me, tell this intuitive thinker, does he want to be the smartest tool in the shed or the bluntest? He said that will appeal to an intuitive thinker because they don't want to be seen as stupid, but emotionally, if they can't connect with that whole ideal, he said to me, I don't, you know, I use the MBTI because it helps me be a better boss, helps me understand my people so I get the best out of them, so the production at my work is good. Mm-hmm. It's not like you and I might go, oh, so I can get to know and love my people and mm-hmm. understand where they're coming from and really be in touch. I get to do this, this, and this. These are the steps. And then I get right. a better team. And that's how it works. So yeah.
It's not as much outcome focus. I guess it is still outcome focused. It is like outcome a feely focus. Outcome focus.
Yes. Instead of a production line, almost outcome focus. We're right. looking yeah. at getting everyone to work in harmony so that the outcome is good because everyone's working well. He's looking at getting them cohesive in a different style of if they're working like a machine and everybody, he understands everybody, then that really works because he knows how to work them yeah. to a degree. Mm-hmm. You know, so very different headset to you and I.
Yeah.
But yes. So yes, it's been that has been one of the biggest godsends for me because my husband used to say things like, you're not going out with that big zit on your chin, are you, tonight? Or, no. Oh, my God, did you jump off the wardrobe to fit in those jeans? You know, like, I'd be like, oh. So he'd say to me, I'm only doing that to help you, you know, so that you know your jeans are tight. So they're really thoughtful, these things, because they just do this stuff. You know, if I say to them, why did you say that? They'll say, I was just helping you, you know, like, so that you wouldn't go out with a camel toe or, you know, whatever. But it's all, so in their heads, they're thinking, how are they helping you?
Yeah.
But they don't realize they're hurting a lot of the time. So, right. yeah. And because there's everyone out there, I have to just go with it. Most of my friends that I'm friends with are feeling types, though.
And then you get that, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you have to find certain things you need outside of
yes.
the family. You know, you like do. You can't. I think a really important marriage tip that I've heard is that like you can't expect your partner to be your everything, because they're just a human. Like they're not, And so if you think about it in terms of Myers-Briggs, and you know you're married to someone who's a thinker, and you need to run something by a feeler, then you need to find that somewhere else. You can't just expect your thinking partner to turn into a feeler.
No, right? And that's perfect. And that's what I always say to people. I say if I need company, I go out. I have loads of friends that Paul's never met, and I do it in his work time, so it doesn't impede on his relationship, our relationship in any sense. But how can one person be everything to someone? You know, like I just think that's a really hard, what a hard task that would be for a person. You know, so I'm very much that your partner brings what you want from them to your relationship, and other people will feed in different things that are important to you. And as long as you understand that, and I'm sitting here 43 years in a relationship, and that's the way it works. You know, I would never expect him out of him all the things that I want out of life. And he's pretty good. You know, he gives me everything that I want, a husband or a life partner to give me. But there's all those female stuff on the side as well. You know, there's all the stuff that you need. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I get it. Mm. And then the other thing I wanted to ask about was that all of the members of your family have a preference for perceiving other than your ISTJ son. So how did you have to alter your parenting to meet his judging needs?
But as a child, he used to lie in bed and I'd lie there with him at night and he would say, what are we doing tomorrow, mummy? You know, and I'd say, oh, we do this, this, and this. And I'm making up all these things in my head because I've got no idea. And the next night we'd lie in bed, he'd say, we didn't do any of those things you said today. I'm like, oh, my goodness, do I have a time policeman on my hands? Like, really, what am I supposed to do? And I write about this in my book because it wasn't until I did the MBTI. I knew he was a melancholic, he liked detail. But when I did the MBTI, I was like, oh, my goodness, okay, so this is why he needs all that feedback on this, you know, because it's really important to him to know if he's going to the shops, what time we're going to. So he and I discussed it as he got older, and we talked about all these things. In his teen years, we discussed being on time, and he actually works it so that I am on time for him. He kind of almost plans it. So one day after school, he said to me, Mum, we have to stop off and get a folder. I've got a project that's due tomorrow. So we stop and I get it, and he gets home and he puts the folder away over on the side. And I said, well, what are you doing? He said, well, I knew that if I asked you to pick it up later, you would be doing it at the last minute. So he figured He said, I figured I'd get you to bite a week earlier. So then I've got it already and I don't have to worry about you you forgetting to pick it up or do whatever. And I'm like, score, good management of your mother. How good is that? So he would always prepare and he prepares us. And so if we, even now, like as an adult, we go to the movies and he'll say to us, now, I want you to know we're going to movies at 7:30 tonight. None of you are changing your minds. We are doing it. And when I get home, I don't want to hear, oh, we don't really feel like it now. And so I say to my husband, we have to do this because
we have to follow through.
You know, we don't want to let him down. We've got to go. And we do. And it's great. And we all laugh. They've got a great sense of humor, my kids. But we all laugh about it. And if I do put him out, I do apologize too, because I know that things are planned. And so for today, I've put in a precursor last night. Now, Jack, I'm having a podcast, not sure what time it is. Don't come around till, you know, after 12. Mm-hmm. And so I've given him his structure and his layout on that. Already my daughter's texted me 3 times and gone, are you sure you're going to be after 12? Would you be earlier? You know, because she's the P. So she's questioning my time span. Everything's flexible. You know, it's got to be flexible. So really important, like I said before, because I think if you're a P parent and you're pushing your J child, you have no understanding. Like he came home and did his homework. I talk about this in one of my podcasts. I just did a thing on homework and helping your child with homework. And I was no good to my son because I go, don't worry about getting it done now. You've got a whole week before you've got to have that in. Well, you know, go ahead and play and have fun. And he'd be like, no, I need to get this done. You know, I need all the materials.
It won't be fun unless I have my work done.
That's right, because I've got to work before I play. I can't do this. I'm play, have a good time. And so he was very stressed if that happened. So he always went off and did his homework, whereas I had the perceiving daughter who went, oh, 8 o'clock at night, oh, my goodness, I've got a project due. And I say, when? Tomorrow. And so she and I, a little last minute people, and I loved helping her because we'd talk all the time while we're doing it, would sit up till midnight doing her project together and have a great at the end of it, because that's what the perceiving person does. There's a real high when you've just kicked your ass at the last minute and you've got something in. So we'd knock it at the park at that time. And she said to Jack once, you know, and for Jay's, you know, my mum did our books for our companies. We had 8 different companies at one time. And she did all of our books, all of our pays. She was an ISFJ. She loved her work, sat in the office. I did it once, stuffed up all the pays. Someone came and interrupted me and everyone got overtaxed. And I never did it again because I said to my husband, this is not my job. This is not me. So Jack's organisational skills were amazing and he did all of his stuff himself. And I say to people, when he got to uni was his come down, because uni throws things in at different time frames. And so he's been studying for many years. I don't know why, but he hasn't found what he loves yet because he wants to find the right thing. So he's always had to finish his assignments just before they're due, whereas the perceiving type loves doing that just before they're due. But for him, he runs at a certain grade of stress with assignments because he can't complete them. So for my daughter and myself, I totally understood her. For him, I didn't really understand. And when I did, I realized what a gem I had because I didn't have to hassle him for homework. But then those types can also be the perfectionists that want to get everything right. And Cassie came home one day from school and said, oh my goodness, I passed, you know, this test. And he said, what did you get? She said 53%. And he went, that's not a pass. You know, he's up in the 90s, you know, you've got to have in the 90s. And she said, yes, it was. She said, there were 5 other people in the class that got less than me and 50% was the pass rate. So for a P, you've passed, you know. So all of those differences in values over what is good and bad really play in, you know. And she's sitting there telling me she's passed and I'm thinking, do I criticize that or she has passed? Like, you know, like what's that? Yeah. And she's 2 degrees. Done really well in those courses. So it's not necessarily a matter of what you're going to achieve. It's a matter of what your study style is and your lifestyle and what you want to fit in. So really important to know whether you're perceiving or judging as a parent and who that kid is that's sitting there, you know, as you go through.
And it's amazing how hard, even when you know, how hard it can be to stretch yourself to that
Yes.
Other style. I know with my daughter, like the rest of us in the family, we all have INTJ. My husband and my son are both INTJ.
Right.
I'm INFJ.
Right.
And so the three of us, we all lead with introverted intuition. Ah. And then there's my daughter who's ISFP. So she's introverted feeling and extroverted sensing. And I try to be really aware of that, because I'm like, okay, she's the one who's different and has to bend to us all the time. Mm. And so my first, like, what I always want to talk about and engage with my kids is the future. Like, I love talking about what's coming and what's that going to look like. And like, next week you guys have this and we're going to do this together. And like, this is what the future might look like. What do you want to do when you grow up? And this is a good path to get there. And like, let's, you know, and like, I'm in the future constantly. And that's how I bond with people too, is talking about that. And that works great with my son. He loves having conversations like that with me. But with her, I know that's not, like, she'll do it because she's flexible and she's like, whatever, you know, but
and she'll
I know that's not necessarily where she wants to be. And she usually doesn't participate as much. Like, my son's there and he's participating and she'll just kind of listen. So when I'm trying to bond with her, I have to remember, okay, no, I need to keep it like extroverted sensing. And it's hard for me to be like, what would I talk about then? Like, I have to talk about what's happening now. Like, what is happening now? let me look around. Oh, look, it's nice out. I guess there is a current moment that's happening. Let me try and put myself there, you know, and feel. So I can go to the introverted feeling at least. That's much easier for me. And we can talk about feelings and emotions and all that. But trying to go to the extroverted sensing for her, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, that must be so hard for you. Yeah, because, you know, we're talking about the day and what are you doing today and what do you see today and what happened today and what, you know, and if someone's projecting into the week and going, oh, where do you see that leading and what do you want to do with your career? Well, hello. Yeah,
that's fun for me. I like talking about that. Right. Yeah.
That's great. That's a great difference, though. And it's great that you understand it. And she'll be a much bigger picture thinker because you are all bigger pictured thinkers. Do you get what I mean? Because those
maybe.
Questions
unless
that
we just
create...
stress her out by making her use it
might
too much. I don't know.
You might do too, but you know, something a little stress, as long as it's not too much stress, you know, a little bit of projection for us isn't bad. You know, it's not a bad learning thing, so don't kick yourself too much about that. She'll survive.
I'll try to extroverted sensing zen myself and not overthink it.
Just think, be boring, be in your head what you think's boring and just do that.
So this was super fun. I know that we could go forever and ever.
Yes,
we can. But we can't go forever and ever. So I would love for you to tell people what you're working on right now professionally.
Well, since COVID, I mean, you know, and even though COVID was such a short time away, it seems such a long time away, starting to work online, doing a bit of coaching. So, you know, if people want to contact me, my website's thepersonalitycoach.com.au. And I have a podcast called Parenting and Personalities, and that's on Apple and Spotify, social media, Facebook, Kate Mason, the personality coach. I've got to admit, don't put too much into that page because that's too much thinking that I have to do. And I've also started a bit of TikTok because my son said you need to be on TikTok. And that's under parenting and personalities. So I am there. Okay. But the work that I love to do, I love to work with people. And I think Zoom has become such a thing, you know, that I'm happy to work overseas and do things like that. I haven't worked it to a perfection thing yet because we do have other businesses. So this is my hobby. This is what I love doing. But I've also been involved in our other businesses in time. So right now I would love to get back to working with people like all over the world. You know, my podcast person is actually in Canada, you know, so and here you are in America. And so, you know, it's so simple. But just to help people get to know yourself, basically understand yourself, help you with your kids. Look, honestly, I've been right through the journey and kids are different today. Media is different. You know, the whole social setup, but I think that connection's the most number one thing is connection and communication. And just just before I kind of leave, the flip thing for me that has made the biggest difference in my life with everything was only 5 years ago, I read How to Talk to Your Kids So They'll Listen, How to Listen to Kids So They'll Talk. Mm-hmm. Changed my whole conversations, even though I've been doing this for the last 30 years. change my whole conversations with people, because as parents, we are too busy telling our kids not to do and not listening. Mm-hmm. And I have brought that, and our partners, and I've brought that into play with my adult children with such success that I wish I'd read the book. I mean, it's been around for years, you know. Yes. It's amazing. And I wish I'd read it so long ago, because my husband and I overparent our children, something shocking. My husband is a bulldozer parent, right? So the other day, my son, 30, goes out of the house, and my husband says, "I think you need a jacket tonight." And I looked at him, I said, "He's 30, okay? He can decide if he's going to put a jacket on tonight." Mm-hmm. But there is that over, you know, that, like, for me, that makes me recognize all of that. And it also, my son was a teacher, and last year he came home, he is still teaching, and he said he hates it. And every day he would come home and he would say, I'd say, "How's your day?" Little Pollyanna me. And he would say, "Shit, it was a shit day." And I would say, no, it can't have been. You must have had some good moments in that day. You must have had a good time. And say, "No, it was shit." So now he comes in, and if he says to me he's had a shit day, I will say, "Wow, that must have been really rough." And he says, yeah, it was. And I said, "So what was the worst thing that happened?" And he'll tell me, and then he says, "But it wasn't all bad." And then he comes in and out of that and tells me all these cute stories about little kids he's taught. Mm. And that's just one example of not telling my story and pushing my story on top of him. And we're all about gratitude and making everybody feel gratitude and not dwelling into what is bad as well. You know, like, yeah. I mean, we don't build resilience in our kids because we don't go, you know what, the worst mistakes have ever happened in our lives are probably the greatest learnings. So we all make mistakes, and they're sometimes most of our most important things. So leaving on the note, listen to your kids, help them make mistakes successfully, and get to know yourself. And it's been wonderful talking to you. I love your show, and I love what you do.
A great note to finish on. Thank you so much for coming and sharing and giving all your perspectives on parenting. And let's stay connected.
I'd love to do that. And thank you so much for inviting me on, because I've had a lovely time.
Thank you so much to Kate. You can check her out at katemasonauthor.com. And don't forget to please check out her podcast, Parenting and Personalities. She does amazing work there, and I'm really glad that you guys will have that to listen to in addition to my podcast, as well as in place of it, because I am working on winding down the podcast. And then don't forget about the course that I discussed at the top of the episode about using your personality type in your parenting through OzApt, and that link will be in the show notes. So let me know how you liked this episode. I'd love to hear from you at familypersonalitiespod@gmail.com. You can follow me on Instagram at familypersonalities, and I'll catch you next episode. That's it for our show this week. We would like to apologize to our children, our parents, our spouses,
and anyone else we may have lovingly thrown under the bus this episode.
Thank you for listening, and catch us next time on the Family Personalities Podcast.